And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Good morning, 4 minutes past nine, Wednesday the 26th of November 2025. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're having a good morning. And it's a very good morning to you, and thank you so much for joining us here on the 9 to noon show for 3 hours of all the latest news and stories that are important to you. Your comments, of course, as they come in thick and fast throughout the morning, you know what to do. And, of course, we'll chat to some lovely people from across the region as well to tease out their stories. 086 60 25,000. That is our WhatsApp and text number. If you want to get involved from outside the Republic, it's 00353 8660 25,000. And so many of you listen on smart devices. So I was running through some of the statistics about the amount of pulls on smart devices, and it's like something like 4 million a month. It's remarkable. And I know many of you across the Northwest are listening on your phones or on your smart speakers, but thousands upon thousands of you listening around the world to us as well. So we want you involved, or as involved in the conversation as if you were sitting here beside me in Letterkenny. 07491 25,000 is the telephone number. Caroline Orr is back after a well-deserved break, and Donna Marie Doherty was producing for the last few days along with Shannon, and did a sterling job as always. But Caroline is back, and you can also email comments at highlandradio.com. So if you listen to the podcast, or if you listen to the overnight repeat, feel free to be involved in the programme. We'll pick up your messages and carry them into the next live show. And of course, if it's your thing, you can watch the programme on YouTube, which means you can watch on your smart TV, Fire Stick, or across your mobile devices. We're on the X platform, formerly Twitter, of course, and on the Facebook pages. So good to have you on board, whichever way you choose to join us. The Irish Times today is a story about defective concrete blocks, and it's quite interesting. It's focused on social housing, because we've been talking about this quite a lot lately. And there are more than 1,000 social houses in Donegal that are visibly cracked due to defective concrete blocks, including 89 council-owned homes lying empty because of the scale of the damage. Now, the 89 is not new information. We know these are people that have been moved into other properties. Donegal County Council believes that up to 2,000 social homes could be affected by the defective block scandal when social houses in estates where other properties are affected by cracks are included in calculations. The council has been asking the Department of Housing for 4 years for funding to repair the damage done to its housing stock by defective blocks, but a scheme to state fund the remediation has not yet been approved. Donegal County Council said the cost of such a scheme is expected to be substantial. Donegal, of course, is one of the counties worst affected by the defective concrete block scandal, where homes built with blocks made of pyrite and mica, or mica, have cracked, which is, this is where they've kind of gone away from the actual science here, which is quite regrettable, because the headline reads over 1,000 social houses in Donegal visibly cracked due to mica or pyrite, which is, it's a good, and fair play to Ellen Coyne for writing the article. But it misleads in terms of the science and what's actually causing the cracks. We know there are homes with mica that are perfectly fine and people can't sell them for that matter. That's why the new science being published is so important. As I say, it's great to see some national attention on it, but the terminology is just not necessarily as helpful as it could be. On to the Irish Independent, and the government's getting a slap on the wrist from a watchdog. It's been accused of budgeting like there's no tomorrow by an independent watchdog after it failed to provide forecasts beyond 2026 in last month's budget. It is as if 2027 doesn't exist, says Seamus Coffey, chair of the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council. Good planning and budget requires forecasts that go longer or go more than 15 months ahead. Mr. Coffey was one of the first people Simon Harris met after being appointed finance minister last week. Asked by the Irish Independent what message he had given to Mr. Harris last Thursday, Mr. Coffey said he outlined IFAC's concerns in relation to the recent growth rate of spending. He also highlighted concern over an inability to stick with budget amounts and the fact that there are vulnerabilities in the public finances. If we are only running surpluses next year of 5 billion with the strength of the economy, with all the corporation tax that's coming in, does it leave us vulnerable? That was the nature of the conversation, he said. And I think, of course, it does leave us vulnerable. So if, you know, if you feel like you're feeling now, if you're struggling like you're struggling now, when we've got surpluses and things are going well, you can only imagine what it might be like if the economy does take a turn for the worst, right? Because lots of people will be coming from a low base further lower down in terms of their life. Father Ted, co-creator Graeme Linehan, he's become a very anti-trans person in the public eye. He was part of the original crew that put Father Ted together. And he came out commenting on social media about trans issues and what have you. He attributes it to him losing his family, his marriage breakup, and being ostracised, really, in the world of the arts. He can't get work. Or what have you. So the Father Ted co-creator, Graeme Linehan, he was yesterday cleared in England of harassing a transgender activist on social media, but found guilty of criminal damage off their mobile phone outside a conference in London last year. The 57-year-old flew in from Arizona to appear at Westminster Magistrates Court in person yesterday, where judgment was delivered by Judge Brittany Clark. Linehan denied harassing Sophia Brooks, as he goes by now, on social media between October 11th and October 27th last year, and a charge of criminal damage of their mobile phone on October 19th last year outside the Battle of Ideas conference in Westminster. In a judgment, the judge said she was not satisfied that Linehan's conduct amounted to harassment, or that the complainant was as distressed as they made themselves out to be. In one video of Brooks confronting Linehan, the judge said that the activist looked visibly happy and not distressed. So there were back and forwards on the day, and subsequently he did grab the person's phone and chuck it to the floor. I'm not surprised he was done for that. So that would be a victory of sorts for the victim. But in terms of the other charges of harassment, he was cleared. A shocking story from down the country. A woman was set on fire after she answered the door in West Dublin yesterday morning. The attack happened in the Oak Downs area of Clondalkin at around 20 past 10 in the morning. The woman answered a knock at the door and was doused with petrol and then set alight. The attackers made their escape on an e-scooter. Although some of the information I'm hearing this morning is different to this. Apparently there were some windows broken and I heard they escaped on a motorbike. But the woman's understood to have suffered burns to over 40% of her body. A man in the house, who Gardaí believe was also a potential target in the attack, suffered non-life-threatening injuries as he tried to quench the flames. Both she and he are known to Gardaí, and the working theory here is that this is drugs related. So that's down in Clondalkin in County Dublin. Now, on to the Irish Sun. Enoch Burke is back in jail, by the way. I wasn't sure over the last couple of days, but sort of because he was committed to prison but hadn't really turned up in prison yet. But Enoch Burke is back behind bars for a fourth spell in prison. The former teacher, a wanted man for the past week, was arrested by Gardaí yesterday. It came exactly 7 days after a High Court judge ordered the imprisonment of the sacked school teacher. What would you do if you had a week on the run or free from jail, knowing you're going back indefinitely? You might go out for something to eat, have a few beers. If you don't, you know, maybe even smoke a few fags. I don't think Enoch would have. Burke was last night once again locked up in Dublin's Mountjoy prison after being brought to the slammer at around 2:30 p.m. yesterday. The former teacher has spent more than 500 days in jail in the last 3 years. It is his fourth spell behind bars for contempt of court order restraining him from going to Wilson's Hospital School in County Westmeath. So it's his fourth spell behind bars because he's breaching a contempt of order. Sorry, he's not breaching it. He is breaching a court order, having contempt for it, which was restraining him from going back to the school where he was dismissed from. And lastly, in sport, only could happen to Ronaldo, and there's lots of players are going to miss out in the World Cup, or certainly a few because carrying suspensions. Not Ronaldo, though. Cristiano Ronaldo is set to be available to start for Portugal's World Cup campaign despite his red card against Ireland. FIFA has imposed a 3-match ban, but the final two games are suspended for 1 year, providing there is no similar infringement during the probation period he's already served. Have you ever heard of this? He served a 1-match suspension, so that one's in the bag. But, I mean, this sounds like something you would see a court deliver. So to allow him to play in the World Cup, now let's not forget Ronaldo has had dinner with Donald Trump recently. They are suspending the two-game ban, providing there's no further activity. Ronaldo was shown a red card, as you remember, after appearing to swing an elbow at Ireland defender Dara O'Shea during the World Cup qualifier earlier this month. Meanwhile, Ireland are in pot four for the World Cup draw on December 5th. The boys in green will be in the draw under the European playoff D and therefore know who they potentially meet at the tournament if they can get through the playoffs in March. It's a bit early yet to be talking about who we might actually play in the competition. But there's Ronaldo, special treatment, really, which is treatment I think should be given to every player that's maybe missing the opening games because of suspension. But anyway, he is arguably still, even though he's quite old now, still the biggest player in world football. We're joined on the programme by Tony, who has a holiday home in Dunfanaghy. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning.
Lovely to speak to you. Right, Tony, we're talking about road safety again, I suppose, in one form or another. And you've been wondering about access from Dunfanaghy to Port na Blah, which I'd say it's a well-trodden path.
Yes, Greg. Well, you drive out that road any day of the week, you'll see pedestrians on the hard shoulder. You'll see families with buggies, with kids walking on the hard shoulder. And it's not even an official hard shoulder, it's just a hardcore. And it's just, it's danger. There's a lot of danger on that road. It's the M56. It's a fast enough moving road. And so the safety first is like obviously the first aspect, but also it's an untapped resource there that potentially could be cycle lanes and footpath lanes to bring you down to Port na Blah, to bring you on down to Marble Hill. There's you start looking at that, you look at the increase in tourism that could bring to the area, the increase in sort of resources, funds coming into the area. So I don't see why this hasn't happened already. You know, it's for so many aspects, you know, it's something there. It's not as if land needs to be bought to actually create to make this happen, because if you look at that road, you have verges either side, grass verges, so it's not a major infrastructure project, you know, as far as I can see. So I don't know where the Department of Infrastructure or the council deals with this sort of thing, but I don't know. I would like to see more action happening. I've been going to that area for a long, long time, decades. And about 8 years ago, I bought a holiday home there and sort of more vested interest. And I'd just like to see that happen. And I see the amount of tourists come to the area, and I'm going to see them walking into town evening there, the kids, and they're obviously going to spend a lot of money in town, and you know, Donegal Council can't even provide a proper path for them, you know, so it makes you scratch your head, you know, what's going on, you know?
The line is not fantastic, but effectively what you're saying as well is, you know, obviously this would be a good public resource, but it would increase traffic. Yes. And potential and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, but obviously if we had cycle lanes in there too, that would obviously ease traffic too. A lot of people would cycle down to the beaches and down to the pier there at Port na Blah. So as far as I can see, it's a win-win situation. Like, why can't this happen? I don't know what's... Has there been consultation on it? Have you had anyone on there from Donegal Council?
Not that I can recall. To discuss it? I just can't recall it, to be honest with you, at this point. And there is a wide, hard shoulder there. That's the bit you're referencing, isn't it? So that you've got the two lanes of the N56. Yes. It's really just repurposing that wide...
Yes, absolutely. So it seems like a no-brainer to me, and it puzzles me why this has taken so long to happen for, I don't know. It's like, obviously, I'm not from, like, wasn't born in the area, but I'm sure the people there would be thinking the same, you know. It's like, there should be a footpath all the way down. Wouldn't it be a great, you know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that area, wouldn't it be a great walk from the town down to Port na Blah and back again, and then maybe on further down Marble Hill, obviously. Fantastic beauty. And the more you think about it, the more, like, you know, if you go down to Marble Hill there in the summer, there's no parking. And it's, although the council has done some parking, additional parking the last couple of years, but if people could cycle down there, that would ease on the parking stresses too. So
the thing is too, Tony, with things like this, and maybe there's a local rep will come on and guide us. You know, it doesn't necessarily come out of council funding as such. You know, there's active travel funds that are there. There are other funding avenues whereby you could at least part from this types of work, because, you know, of course, if you build infrastructure for people to walk and cycle and what have you, you know, it doesn't necessarily all have to come out of the council's budget, I'd imagine.
Yes. So, you know, what has there not been a task force set up? Or I would like to hear from the council what has actually been done, what efforts have been made, the approach to Department of Infrastructure or whoever deals with the roads and get this moving, you know. Obviously, there's a lot of interest in it, you see, from the Facebook posts and health and safety. And, you know, you could just go on and say the family's coming into the area in the summer, you'll walk along that road, and they're bringing money into the town. And I call it summer dollars, you know. The more tourists you can get in the summer, the winters are shorter, you know. So,
oh, for sure, yeah.
It's win-win. So, if somebody come on from the council and say, what has it been knocked back? Has it been a task force set up? Has there been design consultants that can try and create a sort of design for what this could be? But I don't know. It's all very quiet, you know. So
okay, we'll chuck it out there and see what other people have to say.
That'll be great, you know. And that's like, let's give everybody a shake and let's get it done, you know. Let's push it on, you know. I don't want to sort of, after this conversation today, people go away and it's forgot about again. I would like to keep the momentum going and, you know, get this moving, get it on the table and get it out the door,
all right,
as I say, you know.
It with us, Tony. Thank you very much indeed. A caller says, I agree with him, but we could say the same about Clonmany, Gwydor and Dunloe. Our present road conditions are terrible. Tourists are not bringing the same as they used to or coming, is it? Let's look after the every local person on the roads first. But this, say, for instance, there's the only similar project I can think of that's currently ongoing at the moment would be the cycling footpath between Carrigart and Downings. It's not for tourists. It's as much for locals. There's a lot of people out walking and exercising now. So it's as much for locals as it is for tourists. So I wouldn't see, obviously Tony threw in there the fact that it could bring tourism to the area, but it's not exclusively for tourists. On the Graham Lenehan issue, Graham Lenehan is not anti-trans. He's anti-trans people in women's spaces, sports and prisons. There is a difference. But if you're a trans person, those things are very important to you. And if you've got someone who's actively campaigning against you, that you believe that he is anti-trans, right? So it's semantics, really. At the end of the day, he's not exactly championing trans rights outside of the spaces that you talk of. But I do understand what you're saying and the clarification there. On footpaths, a caller says, it's all very well talking about more footpaths and cycleways, but has anyone looked at the poor use of them? Many of these towns need infrastructure and these footpaths should be at the end of the list. All right, that's a counter view, and I understand exactly where that's coming from. On Enoch Burke, it's amazing how they always have a place in Mountjoy for Enoch Burke and the real criminals are walking free. Doesn't make much sense. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. We were speaking not so long ago about an MEP about how the fact that violent criminals are on day release or early release or what have you. But Enoch Burke, there's always a spot for him to stay in every day of his sentence. So I understand where you're coming from there. And it would be an interesting question for the prison service to respond to. Hi, Greg. Enoch Burke is Ireland's first Protestant religious prisoner of conscience after being arrested again. Some judge in Dublin can say what he wants, but he cannot hide the fact that Enoch is a Protestant religion prisoner of conscience who spoke out against the de facto grooming of children, and the state could not tolerate an individual speaking the truth. Ireland is now no different from China or countries in the Middle East, believes Raymond, and that's your view. And I'm not going to point as to why he's actually in prison. It probably annoys people. Enoch Burke has huge support in this country, says another emailer. I don't want my child taught 76 genders until she's of the right age. I don't want the pride flag above our school, and most people do not know what the flag stands for, and I don't think you do either because you never talk about it. Where is media support for the long delay in the justice for three kids and their carer stabbed at midday waiting on a bus? Your silence won't be forgotten as this whole thing has changed from the USA. Well, just in relation to that crime, that criminal conviction, any public commentary on that could avoid justice being gotten. And I would hope someone as intelligent as you are that can put together such an interesting email would understand that you can't talk about active cases, because that could be used by the defence to say that they were unable to get a fair trial. The speed at which that case is progressing is the same as all cases, and we've tracked it right from the beginning. But when someone is charged and due before the courts, any mention or commentary on official media, in other words, a media that's governed by Commissioner Mann, could very seriously compromise that trial. And I do hope you understand that it's not silence. It's actually a protection of the victims. But anyway, this caller goes on to say, or this emailer, Enoch is in jail, and the guy who stabbed those kids is where we don't know anything. He's in prison as well, by the way. You've more listeners because people are more alert to what's going on. Your Friday panel, and you would have Enoch in jail. Go to the very start of the problem. No, actually, the Friday panel, Brendan, were of the view that someone should not lose their job because they refused to use someone's chosen pronouns. So they were in agreement, you could argue, in effect, as to why Enoch Burke raised his issues with management of the school. It's how he raised those issues with the management of the school that led to his dismissal and his subsequent appeal of that dismissal. And he continued to turn up at the school, and that's why he's in prison. But I'm not going over that over and over again because it probably bores listeners, and I think people are locked in as to whether they agree or disagree and so on and so forth. I'm told there's an oil spill on the road all the way from Maville Pier to the town, so please be careful as a car could go off the road. So if you're on the road, just be careful. There's an oil spill on the road all the way from Maville Pier to the town. And staying on the roads, to anyone walking on the Windy Hall Road, please have a bit of consideration for drivers. Last night I met a young fella dressed all in black, not one bit of reflective gear on him. God forbid anything happened. The traffic on that road is crazy. All right, thanks for that. Now we say good morning to Adele Mangan. Adele, thank you so much for joining me today. It's good to have you with us. Right, now you and Luke are hosting a fundraiser in aid of Filikon, in memory of your baby boy, Alexander. Now, the event is taking place at the Shamrock Bar in Falkara on Saturday at 8:30 p.m. And I'll tell listeners about that again, of course, as the interview goes on. How are you keeping, Adele?
I'm doing okay, Greg. I suppose there's a bit going on with the fundraiser, but it's also the time of year. Sander's anniversary was on Monday. But I suppose it makes the whole event, it just feels right, you know, to do it around now. So, yeah.
Talk to us about Xander.
Xander is our lovely little boy. He was 15 days old. He unfortunately, you know, he was born early. He was unwell, and we went through those 15 days with him in intensive care. So all of that was a roller coaster, as you can imagine. But we were so glad to have the time that we spent with him. He was a real little fighter, and we're just really, really glad that we had him and that he came into our lives.
Because you had to have an emergency C-section at 34 weeks, didn't you? And unfortunately, there were complications that Xander, for all his battling, couldn't overcome.
Yeah, that's right. So I was feeling unwell prior to going into the hospital. But, you know, had been to Now Doc and my own doctor, and it just wasn't very clear what was happening, and it wasn't clear that there was anything really that wrong, but I felt like I needed to be seen. And basically I was seen, and ultimately after some scans and further scans, then they were able to see the fluid around Sandra's organs. And from then on, it was just all go. Everything happened very fast. And yeah, it was an emergency C-section then at 34 weeks.
Now, there are people, of course, listening that will understand, you know, what you just went through. And for others, they won't be able to imagine what you went through. It must have just been the most awful of times. And I suppose it's at that point, with everything that's going on, that you sort of go, well, you know, what supports are there for us?
Yeah, to be honest, Greg, when we were going through everything, as I say, obviously there was the good moments with Sandra, but the whole experience in the hospital and everything, I would call a sort of psychological torture, really, you know, because we didn't know what was happening and things were changing so fast. Things were very much up and down, and we were trying to keep up with everything and keep up with all the medical side of things as well and keep ourselves composed during a very difficult time. Subsequently, we had heard then when unfortunately, Xander actually died of sepsis, but so he went very, very quickly in the end. And it was a surprise, kind of, for it was a shock, not that, you know, it wasn't our greatest fear, but even
everything, I presume death, what you mean by that is all of the medical conversation at that point was about fetal high drops, I presume. And then out of nowhere, you're told, well, it's actually sepsis, and whatever way your brain was working at that time, that just presumably, you know, came from left field.
Yeah, yeah, he was actually in some regards recovering, and at that stage we thought, you know, it might be a long road, but that we would be able to take him home. So it was the medical staff and ourselves were sort of it was very much a terrible shock. So and then, when we went through everything then and Xander passed away, we were, the bereavement midwives in the Coombe and Letterkenny were extremely helpful, hugely amazing help. And through them, they introduced us to Felicon and, you know, the memory box. And from then, they sort of helped to put things together for us, even down to getting a little lock of hair of Sanders and getting the little prints done off his hands and feet. So you get the ink prints in your memory box, and then 6 months later we got the little molds, the little prints that you see then, that the picture that was in the paper. So all those things were very precious to us. And I think just knowing that there was this amazing organisation there to kind of help you through those stages, because otherwise, you know, you feel very alone. You have your family and obviously friends and everything, but...
But with the best will in the world, they can't get into the space you're at, because this is so unnatural, and it's not, thankfully, it's not common, right? There's different ways we can lose people, but to lose a baby... We don't often have the words as much as we might love and support you.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's it. And Felicon are made up of bereaved parents. So they all, unfortunately, understand sort of all too well what somebody might be going through when they lose their baby, instead of getting to bring their baby home.
And this box that you have with the things that you've mentioned, presumably without the advice or suggestion from Felicon, you wouldn't have those. I mean, I can't imagine me having the presence of mind to think about that at that time.
That's exactly it, Greg. It's you know, you're in such shock and you're grappling with so much, and so much is up in the air, that, you know, it's something you wouldn't think of, and those moments would pass you by, and then you would think, oh God, I wish I had... You know, it would never occur to you, you know. So it's just a little box of comfort, I think, that they try and give you, so that you have all of these little things and photographs and little blankets and all of those kind of little baby things, you know, that you have something that you can connect still with your baby.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure that works on a very deep level, because it's... It's such a fleeting but important time that you had with your son.
Yeah.
These things ground that memory, and it makes sure everything's sort of never forgotten. Not that you would ever forget, but there's this the mental side, what you feel within you. There's something physical to attach that to.
That's it. Yeah, it's tangible. It's, you know, it's something you can see. You can see on the wall, like his little prints, and obviously we have lots of photos on that of him as well. But the whole thing, I would say, is I think the care and the value and all of these special things, what Filicon, I think, aim to do is to make sure that you know when you feel like your baby mattered. And your baby, their memory, you know, can be kept alive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something very important that, unfortunately, in the past, a lot of people wouldn't have had the opportunity for. A lot of things were kept quiet. And I think now to be able to celebrate your baby's life and to be able to keep their memory, it's just such a special thing.
You were able to, was it through Filicon that you would have had meetings with other bereaved parents on you know, dealing with your loss on your road to recovery? Were they facilitated also by Filicon, and how important was that process for you and your husband?
So Filicon have regular meetings for many parts of the country. It's online, and some parts of the country it's in person. We've been able to attend both, but In general, with the online ones, it's, you know, to hear other people's stories, it's something you don't want anyone to have gone through what we've gone through. But to have other people there that know and to hear their stories, and even though, you know, you'd just be like crying through all their stories, but just it's that sort of piece of understanding and connection. And it's so important, because I think, as I said before, you can feel very alone. Yeah. You can feel very alone. So to have those, you know, it's just so helpful.
Yeah, and I've spoke to couples in the past, and they've gone at different times, or they go for different reasons. You know, people's, and I'm not talking about you and Luke, Adele, but, you know, even in that situation, we're all very individual in how open we are at the beginning, or how closed we are, or how we process things or struggle to process things. So, you know, I've heard of stories where couples go at different times, or they go together, but they can both still move at the pace that's comfortable for them. And I think that's so important, rather than just bottling things up in the between four walls.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And like, to be honest with you, Greg, like myself and I couldn't talk. For the first few meetings, we couldn't even share our story. It was so painful. And then eventually when we were, you know, it's just such a safe space, you know, and then and to be able to just share our story and all of that as well. It's just, I suppose that there's a sort of validation or acknowledgement, or that we feel like we're honouring Xander's wee life, still being able to talk about him and that. So, yeah they provide that space.
And such was your experience. That's why it's led to this fundraiser taking place on Saturday, November 29th. It's at the Shamrock Bar, Fallcarragh. And talk to us about the evening. What can people expect, Adele?
Yeah, so basically, Greg, Luke has been growing his hair. He just happened to start growing his hair, I think, around the time that we were expecting. And it's still going 3.5 years later. So, and he also does Movember through his school. He's a teacher. And this year we just thought, you know, as well as the moustache coming off at the end of November, you know, we'll use the whole opportunity as a fundraiser for Filicon. And on Saturday night, so basically his hair will be cut, and also his sister's hair, Rebecca, that will all be donated to the Rapunzel Foundation. And the event itself then will be just Luke's head getting shaved and his moustache shaved.
Rapunzel, that's by the way, they provide free real hair wigs to children and adults. So again, this is helping another group. Rebecca, is she getting a trim? Or
she's just getting as much chopped off as needs to go for Very Rapunzel good. So she's not shaving her head, but yeah, the head shave will happen, and then there'll be a sort of like a take your pick raffle. We've had really generous donations in the form of just sponsored, prizes and that as well. So that'll be happening as well on the night. And then there's a band on afterwards in the Shamrock. So it'll be just a nice night, I think, all round.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, obviously, while it's born from an incredible loss, it's obviously positive in remembering Xander, and he'll be very much remembered on the night. But also, you know, being able to support Fela Kahn, support Rapunzel, live music, bit of fun as well too.
Yeah,
what's your feeling about Luke going bald? Is he going down to the actual, is he going down to the skin?
Well, yeah, we probably won't get the razors out, but we were thinking of, we'll put him a number one anyway on the shaver. And,
do you not think just go zero when he's going as far as he's going?
It's possible, yeah.
Send him into school on Monday, just zero.
I know, yeah. Everyone will be horrified, I'm sure, but it'll be a bit of crack.
He'll be stealing your foundation on Sunday evening, don't you know?
He's been stealing my hairbrushes so far, so that'll be changed.
All right, you'll hardly recognise him. So get along, if you can, to the event. It's in memory of baby Alexander Xander, and it's to raise funds for Fela Kahn, and it's in the Shamrock Bar, Falkara, Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. Luke is very bravely shaving his head. Rebecca's going to be donating, his sister, going to be donating some of her hair too, all to Rapunzel. They make real hair wigs for children and adults who've suffered hair loss, and that's often due to illness as well, so that can be a little ray of light potentially for a family at a very difficult time. Of course, Xander would be remembered on the evening. You couldn't have it without him there. And it's all, as I say, to maybe this is the time that an individual or a couple who can relate to this conversation just go along and be around other people, not necessarily speaking, but just be around other people that might understand how they feel. And if you can't get there on the night, as the majority of you can't, obviously, because you're not in and around Valcara, go to idonate.ie/Alexander's parents. So idonate.ie/Alexander's parents, and we'll put that link on our Facebook page as well. So if you've got a fiver or a tenner to spare, it all goes to Fela Kahn so that they continue to support people, wonderful people like Luke and Adele at the most terrible of times. I really appreciate you speaking to us. I know you're aware, Adele, that people bravely speaking out like you do gives a voice to others that just don't feel that they can do that as well. So it's a very important thing that you're doing. I've been delighted to get to know Xander a little bit. I'm looking forward to seeing somewhere on Facebook Luke's completely bald head.
Maybe a one's fine.
Is there anything you want to add?
Just on what you're saying, I think this is it. It's about raising awareness, and for any other parent that has unfortunately gone through what we've gone through, just to let them know that they're not alone. There's other people out there who understand, and that there's people out there who can support them. And I also just want to say a thank you to absolutely everyone who has donated, who has supported us, given us words of encouragement. And to be honest, just to thank absolutely everyone from the bottom of our hearts, from myself and Luke, that have supported us since we lost Xander. And I was just thinking about it this morning that, you know, people say it takes a village, you know, to raise a child. But myself and Luke have found that that village was there for us to support us after we lost ours. So just thank you, everyone.
And it's a lovely name, Xander. Really is.
Yeah, we do love it.
Thank you so much, Adele. Lots of love from everyone here, and the best of luck on Saturday night. I do understand that you'll have a brave face on you, but it'll be a roller coaster for you as well. A lot of positive emotion, but also sadness. So we're thinking on you and Luke, and I'm sure the wider family as well. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Bye-bye. Look after yourself. That's Adele Mangan there. And if you can, get along to that fundraiser in Falkara. It's in the Shamrock Bar from 8:30 p.m. on Saturday, and it's raising funds from Fela Kahn. And you can engage in that organisation when it suits you. There are people who maybe went through something like that and have held on to it or internalised it. It's never too late, by the way, to, you know, face that and work through it. by the way, because it's a bereavement or a loss. Not that there's a hierarchy or whatever, but whether it was someone who was 55, you still feel it potentially in yourself. And if you don't and you deal with things differently, that's okay too. If you can support Adele and Luke, Luke is shaving his head and his handlebar moustache, and Rachel also's donating quite a chunk of her hair. You can go to idonate.ie/Alexander's Parents. So we were speaking to a listener a little earlier on who was saying, why isn't there plans for a footpath between Dunfanaghy and Portnablai? He argued that this would make an awful lot of sense for locals and also, of course, for visitors. Well, we're joined by the Cathaoirleach of the Glenties Municipal District, Councillor Michael McClafferty. He's pushing an open door, it would seem, Michael, because you're to inform us that plans are afoot.
Yes, Greg, that's correct. You're listening, and apologies, I missed it there earlier on.
Sorry.
I missed the total conversation. I was just out there feeding cows. But anyway, the bottom line is, Greg, anyway, he's right. An open door has been pushed here at the minute. This footpath through town will go ahead. If people want to go onto the workhouse in Dunfanaghy there at the minute, the Heritage Centre there at the top of the town, if they want to go in there for a cup of tea, cup of coffee, and when they're in there, they can have a look around the workhouse, but also they will see as well on the wall in there preliminary plans at the minute for the footpath for Dunfanaghy to Portnablai. I might stress now at the minute, this is important, it's just from Dunfanaghy to Portnablai at the minute, it's been covered there. That's all at the minute. I know other people are looking to go on from Portnablai on to Ards. That's a different thing at the minute. That's been looked at as well, but at the minute, Dunfanaghy to Portnablai is the one that's been looked at the moment, Craig.
So it's at design stage, yeah. People can have their input. I suppose after that, hopefully this wouldn't be too complicated in terms of planning. They can move really quite smoothly. Is it a case then that the council looks at what funding it might have available and maybe some active travel funding or other funding schemes that might be there? Like, do you believe this will progress? I'm not asking for a timeline, that's impossible, but do you believe that the process is underway, that we'll see this delivered?
According to the conversations and meetings that we've had in the last while, and the colleagues will back me up on this as well, we do believe it'll be delivered in due course through the near-hand future, yes, Greg. Timeline, obviously, you're right to say, it's hard to say, but due to subject to funding, it will be delivered.
Okay, good stuff.
It may take some time, but it's going to be delivered.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on it. Thank you very much indeed, Councillor Michael McClafferty there, who is Cathaoirleach of Glenties Municipal District. For some people, depending on where you're listening to us in the county, Christmas doesn't really get going until the Warriskies House Christmas lights are switched on. And the switching on of their Christmas lights display takes place on Saturday, the 29th of December. So that's this coming Saturday. Santa's going to be switching them on too. He's a very busy man, so to be able to secure his services so close to Christmas is pretty impressive. So the light switch on by Santa is at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday. This is at Michael and Mary Warriskies House, Gort Cali. And there's carol singing from 7 p.m. before the big guy does his bit. Everyone's welcome, and all proceeds this year are in aid of the Meva Voluntary Fire Service. So, as I say, lots of you visit every single year, and why wouldn't you? The official switch on Saturday night, carol singing from 7, and then the big switch on itself at 7:30 p.m. So get along to that if you can. Right, on tourism, Marble Hill has always been a disaster for parking. People from outside the area will park absolutely anywhere, even up farther past the beach, the wee windy road. They would park knowing they would block all while behind someone one day. I actually had to ask someone to not park there, to move on, as a big bus was coming behind me and I could hardly pass them, never mind the bus. And that's something that's going to come up again in the summer. It's going to be buses being blocked by people trying to access our beaches. It'll come up in the summer. Are we doing anything now to plan for it, I wonder?